And this is Dr. Andy of Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour on KDVS 90.3 FM, Davis. Thanks very much for tuning in to your local campus and community radio station. I've got a very special show for you this afternoon. At least once or twice a year, I have the very exciting midterm exam show, where I invite students from one of my classes, usually a freshman seminar, to join me here in the studios of KDVS at 14 Lower Freeborn and talk about the work that they're doing in one of my classes. This quarter, we're going to be talking about writing about the future. As this is Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour, we talk about writing about the future every week on this show. And now, we're going to be joined by some students who have done some research on this very topic and have some interesting answers to unexpected questions. That, and I'll tell you about a big poetry event that's happening tomorrow at the John Atsoulis Gallery at 8 o'clock, that being the book release party for Nameless Magazine, the undergraduate journal of creative writing here at UC Davis. That's at the John Atsoulis Gallery at 521 First Street, on the corner of First and E Streets in Davis. Tomorrow evening at 8 o'clock, there'll be an open mic after the published performers perform, and live music, and food, and drink. But I'm getting ahead of myself. And then also tomorrow night, I'll be hosting a fundraiser for Haiti Disaster Relief. I'll tell you about that as well. But for right now, stick around, because I've got 18 excited freshmen and other assorted students thrilled to be talking to all of you about the work that they're doing with the host of Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everyone, to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour on KDVS 90.3 FM in Davis. I'd like to remind you that this is just one of 10 public affairs programs that you can hear Monday through Friday on KDVS. Other shows include It's About You, This Week in Science, and Radio Parallax. I've enjoyed hearing the host of Radio Parallax, Douglas Everett, on KXJZ this week. He's been, and has always been, an occasional guest host for Jeffrey Callison on Insight. But right now, it's KDVS, home of public affairs programming, and of this show, Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. I have the first three of many students here in the studios of KDVS, and they're eager to talk about projects that they've been working on, thoughts about the future that they've been wrestling with. My first guest this afternoon is Meenal Tambe. She's a computer science and economics double major from San Jose, California. And I'm very happy to have her here. Mina, welcome to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour.
Thank you for having me on the show.
Absolutely. So I know that you've been researching topics in the world of electronics. To forecast the future of electronics would be challenging indeed, but I can tell that you don't shy away from challenges. What have you been thinking about with regard to the future of electronics?
Well, about, 10 years ago in about 1999, I bought my first digital camera. It was really fat, had a lot of batteries, and it was only 2 megapixels. But today we've perfected electronics so much that now we can take pictures on our phones and take videos on our phones and play games, and they have laptops where we can actually take them with us, which is revolutionary, the laptop. And now I feel that we've perfected electronics so much that there comes to a point where, we can't perfect it anymore. In 1999, it was revolutionary to have a digital camera versus a film camera. But now our possibilities have seemed almost at a point, which brings me back to the fact that we still live on Earth and life is life. And these electronics oftentimes can't live on Earth because, if we spill a bottle of water on our laptop is gone. All of the information that we needed, unless you have a backup, of course.
Right.
So I think the future of electronics is to be perfecting what we've already perfected in terms of making them waterproof, making them sturdy. See, if you drop your iPhone now, your case might break, your screen might break. But maybe in the future, they'll be made of materials in which, they won't break anymore.
Excellent. So a sturdier, hardier future for electronics that might already be familiar to us.
Yes.
All right. Great. Good job, Minal. And you chose computer science as a major along with economics here at UC Davis. What would you say is the ratio of men to women in your computer science classes?
Oh, gosh. Well, I think it's definitely changed over the years.
Yeah.
But right now I feel it's about maybe 60-40, 70-30.
Okay.
It's still more males than females, but it's starting to get close to even.
All right. Excellent. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And thanks for sharing that with me and with listeners. All right, folks, you see how it works. I have different students on. I give them about 2 minutes to state their piece, and then I shuffle them out for the next group of students. For instance, up next is Amarpreet Everest. She's a second-year music major. She's thinking about going to med school. And she's a student in a class I'm teaching this quarter called Writing About the Future. Now, you've taken on a challenging topic, Amarpreet. What do you have to say about the future of emotion?
Well, a lot of people, when they talk about future, they think about technology and flying cars. And when I thought about it, I thought about the natural instincts, things that, that we have every day in our lives. And to me, it seems like emotion is one of those constant things. And then I really thought about it. How is it constant? What technologies have created more emotions? Before humans got together, was there greed? Was there that emotion? And I'm thinking as we get more and more technologies, what more emotions will come out? And also, how are we displaying our emotions through different technologies? Like when you're online, if you're happy, you put a little smiley face on there and you can tell people are happy. And or you put a frowny face, whatever. You can tell by the way people type whether they're happy or sad. And it's just like what will be our emotional state? It seems very interesting to me. I see what the future has to hold for music, for emotion.
Excellent. Have you what are you likely to run into online that someone sends you or that you research yourself that provides for you some sort of emotional response?
Well, it depends if people are writing with a lot of exclamation marks. I see that they're really excited about what they're talking about, and that if they're writing with big caps, it really captures my attention, and you know they're really trying to get a message across. Whereas if somebody's rambling long sentences, it kind of gets boring, and you know we have to. It's kind of like we're having a conversation online. How would you translate a conversation in real life with a conversation online?
So the use of varied and repeated punctuation marks as well as emoticons, they basically work on you.
To some extent. I mean, you still have to hear what the person is saying with their content and what, you know. It's not just about emoticons or punctuation marks.
Sure.
But punctuation marks, emoticons, they do help you understand a person's feelings. Because you can't, usually you have their facial expressions to read what they're thinking, but now all you have are those extra punctuation marks, all those little extra cues.
Absolutely. All right. Great. Well, Amarpreet, thanks very much for coming on the radio show.
Thank you.
Good job. And now, our final guest in this micro segment is Luka Vidovic. Is it Vidovic?
Vidovic.
Luka Vidovic is here. And he is a second-year managerial economics major and math minor from Foster City. Luka, I appreciate you getting dressed up in a suit and tie to come on the radio. I'm sorry that we won't be able to televise this conversation, but I'll just tell you know your parents and friends and anyone else who's listening that you look very nice today. All right, so here's your question. I know that you're very much interested in advances in technology and in this tension, if you will, between property and freedom. Freedom and security, and especially ways that these issues come up in blogs. And I'm wondering if you had to foresee, look into the future with some of these issues in mind, what do you see?
Well, Andy, that's a tough question. Today, with blogging, news gets out really fast, and
right.
People are able to voice their opinion to a large audience at very little cost. And while that's in some ways a good thing, the integrity and the quality of news gets sacrificed, and because of that, people's reputations can get ruined, and reputations is goes along with property.
Right.
And, you know, there's been court cases like that have dealt with that problem, such as Doe v. Cahill, and also there was one incident where a congressional assistant by the name of Jessica Cutler got fired for blogging about her sex life.
Right.
And the way I see it is that I think it's going to manifest itself in 50-year cycles, in that you, for right now, with blogging, we're getting more freedom, right? But eventually, I think government and institutions are going to start cracking down and coming up with new ways to, you know, control this. And then eventually, some new ecology is going to come along, and we're going to get some more freedom. And so I see this problem manifesting itself in 50-year cycles.
I see. And do you partake in any of this yourself? Are you a citizen journalist ever?
I blog a little bit from time to time.
Yeah?
Yeah.
All right, good. Excellent. And where'd you get your suit?
I got it from Men's Warehouse.
Excellent. And do you like the way you look?
Of course.
All right, good. Glad to hear it. All right, Luka Vidovic, thanks very much for coming on Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour.
It was a pleasure.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to KDVS 90.3 FM in Davis. We'll be right back after a little bit more music, an important message, here on Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour.
Strange little animal in that it allows each and every one of us to make our own individual and creative statements. It is music that brings people of different ages and histories together.
This is Dr. Andy of Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour with an important message. Hochul's Salon and Spa reminds the women of our community that the best defense against breast cancer begins with a thorough annual medical exam. Depending upon your age, a screening mammogram may be recommended. Such early diagnosis means that you'll have an excellent chance of successful treatment. Schedule your appointment today. It may save your life. Brought to you by the staff at Hochul's Salon and Spa at 7330 Fair Oaks Boulevard in Carmichael. They can be reached at 916-487-4941 on the air because they care about the health of the women in our community. This is Dr. Andy of Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour on KDBS. Thanks very much for tuning in to the program. This is our two or three times a year midterm exam show, where I invite students who are partaking in one of my classes, usually a freshman seminar, and request that they come on the air with me and defend themselves. What have they been thinking about, writing about, and in this case, blogging about? I have four students here who are eager to share with you their thoughts and concerns, and I'm looking forward to introducing them to all of you. My next guest this afternoon is Greg Lanton. He's a freshman mathematics major from Portland, Oregon. And, Greg, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Andy.
Absolutely. So, whenever we think about the future, we think about representations of that future that have occurred in science fiction books, such as dystopic futures, utopic futures, and I'm wondering the extent to which such works of literature have been helpful to you in ways that you imagine a world of 50, 100, or even 1,000 years from now.
Yeah. Actually, I've been thinking a lot about this lately. I happened to pick up a book called Looking Backwards,
right.
2000 through 1887, which is actually a utopia, and in my education previously, I'd been introduced to so many dystopia books, like just Fahrenheit 451, to give one example.
Sure.
And so it was. I thought it would be really refreshing and like put a different contrast on it. But the sort of thought processes that led me to were very interesting because Edward Bellamy,
right?
I'm never sure how to pronounce that last name. He paints a very interesting picture in this society in which the entire nation has been made into this cohesive industrial army, all working to further the nation, which, when I thought about it, is actually kind of a very communistic viewpoint. And for some reason, initially reading it, it didn't give that feeling.
Mm-hmm.
But thinking about the tenets of it, like every man gives what he can and takes what he needs, and also just the nation is a citizen, and each citizen is the nation, that sort of thing. But then I got to think about it and its actual feasibility. And while such a thing, I guess, could be put in place, it'd be so boring.
Right.
You know, so each man is a cog in the industrial machine. And even now, people are cogs in the industrial machine. But when they come home, they don't talk to their wife about how many widgets they've made in the factory today, how their production is up. They talk about things like politics. Do you think China is going to possibly call in its debt? I mean, they talk about things. They talk about strife. And it just seems like without that strife, it what would be the point? I don't know if, as a person, I could elevate all my thoughts of struggle to a national or a global community mindset. Like, I feel like I would need to have that personal struggle that I could connect to, like whether or not I'm going to make it through the day tomorrow because there's a SARS epidemic going around.
Right. So do you feel then that even the most purposefully written utopic novel will in fact be a dystopic novel of some sort?
Yeah, to some extent, because it feels like even if everyone has plenty, they won't be able to appreciate that plenty, just as people who are rich now aren't really able to appreciate an extra $1 million that they gain, while if you gave a poor person $1 million, they would be ecstatic. They would have the time of their lives, and I feel like it's kind of the same principle. And it's I don't know if it is feasible, honestly.
Well, I think that'll be something you should continue to think about. All right. Very well done. Greg Lanton has been my guest, and he's one of many students in a freshman seminar that I, Dr. Andy, am teaching this quarter called Writing About the Future. Thanks, Greg, for sharing your thoughts about the future.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Well done. Our next guest this afternoon on Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour is Jessie Phillips. She's a freshman at UC Davis, a communications and political science double major. Her hometown is Los Angeles. Welcome to the radio show, Jessie.
Hi, Professor. It's good to be here.
Good to have you here. So here's the question I wanted to ask you, and you and I have talked about this via email. How do you see the Internet and other widely available communication media as causing, changing, or affecting ongoing and future trends in the world of journalism, and I guess especially with concerns about the death of print, kind of wood pulp journalism that many people are thinking and talking about these days?
Right. Well, the Internet and the technologies today have really created this new current trend in journalism, which is combining many different multimedia forms. So what I'm basically saying is that we're not just reading newspapers. Mm-hmm. We're not just watching news stations. Instead, it's a combination of many different media forms. For example, if you look at news organizations, their audiences have been broken up because of these different media that we're all getting our information from. So what they're doing now is that they're combining all the different media forms in order to supply the public with information through different forms. So, for example, CNN or CanWest of Canada, two very large organizations, what they have done is they've combined not only their newspapers, their TV shows, and websites. So the Internet plays a huge role in this. And basically, they're doing this in order for the public to be satisfied. And meanwhile, while dealing with these changing trends, print journalists are trying to compete with the Internet. And when you think about it, the multitude of sources on the Internet are always being updated 24/7. The Internet never stops. Whereas for print journalists, they have deadlines. So I could go on the Internet at 11 p.m. at night and get tomorrow's news that would be printed in a newspaper.
Right.
And I think that is what really is creating this downslope of print journalism. And for some people, they say that the Internet is portrayed as like a type of fiend to print journalism, and that it's destroying every type of writing form that can't be uploaded, downloaded, or somehow processed on the web. I believe, however, that it's a very good thing for journalism. I think it's pushing journalism into the future. I think that that in reality, it's a perfect marriage. The Internet and journalism is perfect for each other because, one, both purposes are one, to inform people, and two, to connect them. And the Internet also does things that print journalism can't. So, for example, if a journalist wanted to write an article on the Internet, he or she could link a video to it and have this sort of visual aid, which newspapers and magazines can't do.
Right.
And I think that this combination of this multimedia trend is something that is beneficial for a vast number of people, and it gives us many opportunities because for literally anyone who owns a keyboard. And the fact that not one person is just going to open a newspaper stand or just change the channel on a TV really shows how the future of multimedia is progressing.
So with the death of print journalism, perhaps around the corner, it's not something that you lament. It's something that you embrace because there are so many positives and advantages that will come with that.
Exactly.
Excellent. That was really well put. Jesse Phillips, thanks so much for coming on Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour.
Thank you.
Well done. Well, folks, you all see how it plays. I am giving a midterm exam to students in my class writing about the future. We're going to hear just a little bit of music, and then I will introduce our next guest. This is KDVS, 90.3 FM, Davis. Ladies and gentlemen, we're back. This is Dr. Andy of Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour, reminding you that Poetry Night happens tomorrow night this week on a Thursday at 8 p.m. at the John Itzulis Gallery. It'll be the book release party for the print edition of Nameless Magazine, which is the undergraduate journal of creative writing at the University of California at Davis. So if you're interested in seeing what local award-winning undergraduate poets and fiction writers have to say in their new journal, and if you'd like some free live music, free food, free drink, then stop by this free event, if you're so inclined. It takes place tomorrow at 8 p.m. at the John Itzulis Gallery at 1st and E Streets here in the city of Davis. Megan Middleton is my next guest. She's a freshman at the University of California at Davis, majoring in microbiology. She is originally from a city not too far away from my hometown of Washington, D.C. She is from Annapolis, Maryland. Megan, welcome to the radio show.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So we've been talking about different modes of communication, including the web. And I believe you've been researching and thinking about the future of isolation. Do you think there's a relationship between the web, especially Web 2.0, and isolation?
In the past, we always saw the web as a tool for isolation. Uh-huh. You had the stereotype of the gamers who'd lock themselves in their rooms and live in online worlds without ever leaving their house. But now what's so neat about Web 2.0 is it focuses so much on linking people together instead of keeping us apart. We have the social networking tools such as Facebook and communication tools such as Skype and email that right now there's no excuse for you to lose connection with anyone, no matter where they are all over the world.
I think you're right. Now, can we be too connected? Don't you, for instance, have representations of yourself in multitudes of social networks?
I do. I have pictures on Facebook, and you just have to be careful what you put out there for your own safety and just because once it's out on the Internet, there's no controlling where it goes.
Yeah.
It could be available for future employers, or if you're applying to grad school, they might look at it. You just have to be conscious of what you're putting out there and what you're projecting to the world.
That makes sense. And do you have any success stories from Facebook as an example? Have you reunited with any friends from elementary school that you thought you'd never hear from again?
Definitely. And as an out-of-state student here at Davis,
right,
a lot of my friends are still on the East Coast, and it makes it so much easier to connect with them just because it's all in one place. I just have to check my Facebook page. And instead of typing a long email out, I can just send him a quick message like, hey, thinking of you, hope you're doing okay, and just check in.
Right.
And I think that's really awesome about Facebook and other Web 2.0 tools.
Yeah, like you, I moved here from the Mid-Atlantic, and my friends back east, they're surprised after knowing me that I do have so many friends out here on the West Coast. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure your Annapolis friends, too, are impressed by how you're racking up the friends on Facebook. And you know, other examples of your social success. Great, Megan, thanks so much for coming on Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour.
Thank you for having me.
Sure, well done. You're listening to KDVS 90.3 FM in Davis. My next guest on this radio show is Edris Bamanian. Is that how you say that, Edris?
That's correct.
Edris Bamanian is my guest, and he's a first-year economics and environmental science double major. He's from Pleasanton, California. Thanks for coming on the radio show.
Thanks, Professor. I'm excited to be here.
All right. So we've been talking about the web. We've been talking about the future. And I'm wondering what it is that you've been exposed to in any of our course readings or discoveries in the freshman seminar that you're taking with me this quarter called Writing About the Future that has affected where you think we're going as a society or as a people.
Okay. Well, one of my assignments in your freshman seminar was to read a short story
right.
by Philip K. Dick, and it's titled The Minority Report. And it was my responsibility, along with several of my classmates, to read into it, analyze it, and share what we believe the message of the story was with our peers. And reading this short story, I feel, really helped open my eyes to the direction that we're headed towards as a nation.
Mm-hmm.
And
how so?
It wasn't directly through the text. It wasn't explicitly stated, but it got me into that thinking about the future mindset, which I think is the point of the course.
Right.
And I actually blogged about it as well. I felt strongly about it. And I think that the power has shifted from the people to corporations. And in my eyes, that's an issue. And I think that CEOs and lobbyists are blocking our efforts at addressing critical issues that we should be dealing with, such as healthcare and climate change, but that's just to name a couple. And I think that we need to assert that while companies should turn profits,
right.
As you mentioned, I'm an economics major. I understand,
yeah.
Supply and demand. But that while we should turn profits, there should also be an emphasis on not compromising our social and environmental values.
So you feel that there are some beliefs and some values, perhaps ethical beliefs, that are not necessarily well served by open markets?
Yes.
Or free markets.
Well, yeah, because, deals are going to be made with the producers who can produce at the lowest opportunity cost.
Right.
And consumers, we're not conscientious of what the social impacts are. And Nike, for example, they dominate the athletic footwear industry.
Mm-hmm.
And we as consumers demand that they provide their goods at lower costs. And the problem with that is that we're not really thinking about what's going on the other side of the world. They have sweatshops, and we're aware of the fact or of the term sweatshops, but we don't really. I think we need to see them firsthand in order to truly understand the repercussions, the social repercussions. And there are a lot of great companies out there who are putting out goods and such as sneakers, which are made without sweatshops. They're made
right.
in America. So,
New Balance, I think, is such a shoe company. I think they're headquartered up in New England.
Mm-hmm.
And they make their shoes here.
Yeah.
It's interesting what you say. Bill Maher was, I think, on CNN, it was yesterday, the day before, where he was asked about the senator from Indiana, Evan Bayh, who has announced his retirement. And is it sad to lose these centrists in the Senate? And Evan Bayh said that we shouldn't call him a centrist. We should call him a corporatist. Because Bill Maher says that Evan Bayh and many others are putting corporate concerns before the concerns of the people who have elected them and sent them to Congress.
Mm-hmm.
It was an interesting idea. Bill Maher, he's all over the web with this, so you can just Google Bill Maher, Evan Bayh. I think he was on that show with Gloria Vanderbilt's son. Do you know who that is?
I'm not familiar.
Yeah, I'm glad that you don't know that. People at home are screaming his name at me. But he said that, for instance, Evan Bayh's wife serves on the board of a really big, I think it was pharmaceutical company. And when you take that into account, then it would be difficult to expect Evan Bayh not to take those corporate concerns, as well as the tremendous amount of money that he gets from lobbyists and donations, especially now that the Supreme Court has opened the floodgates of donations from corporations, that Evan Bayh really votes with the corporation rather than voting with the right or the left. Mm-hmm. It was an interesting argument, and it, it connects to what you were saying about the need to keep in the forefront our ethical beliefs, even if we believe strongly that a free market is a good thing.
Right.
All right. Edris, thanks very much for coming on Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Well done. Well, folks, you're listening to KDVS 90.3 FM in Davis. My name is Andy Jones, and we'll be back with a few more of my students in just a little while. This is Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. And now, ladies and gentlemen, a word from our sponsor.
This hour of programming is brought to you courtesy of the Yolo County Federal Credit Union. The Yolo County Federal Credit Union is a nonprofit financial cooperative with locations throughout Yolo County. The Yolo County Federal Credit Union offers a wide range of financial services and can be reached by phone at 530-668-2700 or online at yolofcu.org.
On this edition of Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour, we are discussing the future with students in a class that I'm teaching this quarter called Writing About the Future. It's part of the Freshman Seminar program. Freshman seminars are organized and facilitated and made possible in part by the work of folks at the Teaching Resources Center, which is the center on campus that supports innovative, effective, and student-centered teaching at the University of California at Davis. My next guest this afternoon is Kenichi Garcia Nakata. Kenichi is a freshman. He's majoring in psychology, and he is a native of San Francisco. Kenichi, welcome to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour.
Thanks.
So you are a psychology major.
I am.
When we move into the future of psychology, we often move towards neuropsychology. And I'm wondering what you have to say about the future of neuropsychology.
Well, neuropsychology is a field that's always really interested me. It's such a new field that some of its most basic questions are still complete mysteries. I know that one of the questions that has yet to be answered is how we arrive at sort of a subjective experience of the world from just the different parts of our brain and how they work. And as much study as we put into it, it's still pretty much a mystery. And I know that a lot of new technology is really promising in terms of like the development of neuroscience. There's a lot of work in something called a BCI, or a brain-computer interface,
mm-hmm.
where basically it's trying to link up your neuronal networks with different computer systems. Like, technology nowadays is, you know, getting more and more personal in how we interact with it. There are the smartphones with the touch screens, and, you know, it seems as if the technology is moving towards something where we will one day be able to control it just by thinking. There have actually been a lot of interesting studies that have already been done on this kind of technology. I know that there was one at Emory University that was able to help a patient with locked-in syndrome, where basically they can't speak or, like, communicate with the outside world from brain damage. they were able to have the patient control a computer cursor, which then allowed him to communicate with the researchers. And that kind of technology obviously has a lot of potential benefits. I know one of the big ones being prosthetics, where you could have the brain hooked up to a computer chip that can control a robotic arm, and suddenly an amputee will be able to have this robotic arm that functions much like a human one.
And so if we can allow a person who is having trouble communicating or moving, we can connect a cursor to his brain, then next thing you know, you can tell the cursor to activate code that might activate a bionic arm, for example.
Mm-hmm.
So good. That's very exciting. Really, the future is now, as they say. Excellent. Kenichi, that's fascinating. Thanks for doing some research.
Thank you for having me on the show.
Absolutely. Well done. All right. Next on the radio show is Jonathan Cisneros. Jonathan Cisneros is a student here at UC Davis, a freshman who's majoring in international relations. He's from Santa Ana, California. Jonathan, welcome to the radio show.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So you're enrolled in my Writing About the Future class, and we've been talking a lot about, even during this midterm exam, about internet and media. I know that you're a music fan.
Yes.
What do you think is the relationship between emerging technologies and people's relationship with music?
Well, back in the day, you'd think about music as either making it or not, making it big or not. And getting out there was one of the major obstacles for accomplishing your dream or your goals. And the accessibility of the internet and how easy it is to get your music out there has been changing ever since like the presence of the internet. And no longer do you have to either pick music or go to school or do a day job. You can work on your music at home and produce your own music and actually promote yourself through the use of websites such as YouTube or MySpace.
Right.
And no longer do you have to go to a studio and promote using posters or go and like touring endlessly and
I think that's absolutely right. So it's another example of how musicians as well are lowering the bar for participating in their particular field. And then also, if they're savvy and knowledgeable about internet technologies, it makes it much more possible for them to, for instance, go on a virtual tour and share their music with a great number of people,
mm-hmm.
music enthusiasts, bloggers, journalists, that they wouldn't be able to interact with otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
How about you? Do you play an instrument?
I do. I play guitar and I sing.
And have you made the equivalent of records in your basement?
Yes, I'm actually working on my first album in like my room. I have a little interface and I get to add all these instruments. And after I'm done with the song, I get to show my friends by posting it like on my MySpace or on making like a little video and putting it on YouTube, and that's how I get to show their friends and then their friends' friends, and that's how I get my music out there.
Excellent. So how many years will it be from now when we search for the phrase Jonathan Cisneros and actually encounter some of your music? 6 months? Year and a half?
Probably.
All right. 6 months, let's call it. All right. So bookmark this and come back to this in 6 months. We've been chatting with future... Is it rock and roll that you...
Yes,
I play
rock.
Future rock and roll star Jonathan Cisneros. Thank you very much, Jonathan.
Thank you.
Well done. And next up in this segment is Lynn Carey. She is a freshman as well here at UC Davis. She's studying classics, and she's from Foster City, California. Welcome to the radio show, Lynn.
Hi.
Hi. Thanks for joining us today. So you are spending a lot more time with your friends online. And it's kind of a necessary form of mediation here at UC Davis, as it is with most colleges and universities. Do you feel that either you or your friends either have different personalities when they're using these mediated forms of communication to talk to one another? Or do you feel that your friends are pretty much the same no matter how they're sharing with you their thoughts?
Well, I think when I was younger and me and my friends, we first started coming to the internet, we would talk online through instant messaging, and we would, you know, entertain each other with using funky spellings of words and such. And there wasn't really any emotional connection with that.
Right.
And so we looked forward to seeing each other in person more. But now I think as we grow into the technology, maybe we're just becoming better writers or we can express ourselves better. And I feel like I can actually socialize with these people online, but some of my friends, they start becoming different people when they're online, maybe because they have some secret identity, you know, they're just hiding behind a screen name. So sometimes it's even more entertaining to talk to them when we're online, and when I see them in person, that's the boring part. And it's a little troubling because when I see them in person, and if they're just texting to someone else, they just get sucked into their device. And they sound like they're having a great time and that, oh, they're this amazing person and, you know, they can, I don't know, express themselves in this way. But when I'm actually talking to them or when they're on this device, their face is blank and I don't think they're emotionally connected to it. So
that's really interesting. So it's almost analogous to this movie Avatar, where at least some of the characters, have you seen the movie?
Yeah.
Especially where the male lead. He's much more excited about his virtual life than he is his actual life.
Exactly.
And you find that that's increasingly true of you, and that often you're disappointed with your friends when you're sitting with them in person.
Yeah.
Maybe you'd rather just go around the corner, pull out your smartphone, and start texting them rather than face-to-face conversation.
Yeah, I mean, the other day I wanted to hang out with some of my friends, and they live in the dorm next to me, but instead they wanted to webcam because, I don't know, they can put little smiley faces in the chat boxes.
So they wanted to webcam. In other words, they wanted to see you through the camera. They wanted to talk through the camera rather than to go talk with you in person, even though they were, like, say, less than 100 yards from you.
Exactly. I mean, maybe the gestures, like, sometimes, this, I don't know if I'm supposed to say this, but sometimes even when I reach out to touch some of my friends, I mean, they're so absorbed. This is their, like, main way of socializing with the other people. They kind of shudder away or
they don't know
they're
how
not used to it.
They don't know how to receive a hug.
Yeah, it's completely foreign to them now.
And yeah.
Maybe it's therapeutic because maybe if you're shy, then it's how you express yourself and you can get out that way. But I think you need to practice in the real world.
I think so, too. I think all of you at home should start practicing giving hugs more often. Lynn, I'm just going to wave as you go rather than give you a hug because that wouldn't be appropriate as your teacher.
Okay.
Lynn Carey, thank you very much for coming on Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology
Hour.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Folks, you're listening to KDBS 90.3 FM in Davis, and we'll be right back with a few more of my students and another announcement that there's a poetry event tomorrow at the John Itzulis Gallery, First and E Streets. It's a book release party for the latest edition of Nameless Magazine. That's tomorrow night, Thursday night, the 18th at 8 p.m. We'll be right back. This is Dr. Andy of Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour
on KDVS 90.3 FM Davis with an important message from Trinity Episcopal Cathedral. Trinity Episcopal Cathedral is proud to join the year 2010 Blood Drive, and they remind us that all of us need a safe and secure blood supply. If you are healthy and qualified, do your part and donate blood at the hospital or blood bank of your choice. Remember, the greatest gift you can give is the gift of life. This important message is a courtesy of Trinity Episcopal Cathedral in Sacramento. Information about their Sunday worship service is available at trinitycathedral.org. They're concerned for the welfare of our community. We've been talking a lot about Facebook and other communication media. If I don't know you, but you know me because of this radio show, and you want to find out more about what I'm up to via Facebook, then look for Andy Jones Poet. That's the Facebook account that I use to connect with listeners and other people in the poetry world. If you friend me, especially with a little bit of a note that you heard me on KDVS, I'd be glad to friend you back and let you know about what's going on with future episodes of this radio show. Here on KDBS this afternoon, we are engaged in a conversation with a whole bunch of students from a freshman seminar that I'm teaching this quarter called Writing About the Future. I've asked my students, really I've required it, that they come on this radio show and that they ask, they hear questions that I'm asking them. Tough questions about some of the work that they've been doing, and then they're put on the hot seat. Let's see how this next group of students does. Kenan Walsh is my next guest. He's from Oakland, California, a freshman at UC Davis, and he's currently undeclared, but he's interested, as so many students are at UC Davis, in biology. Kenan, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So, I mentioned that you may become a biology major here at UC Davis. And I'm wondering, what is the relationship between technology and the food we eat, the future of food, if you will?
Well, as outlined in the recent documentary, Food Inc., our food system is reflecting corporate America. We have, for example, four companies that control over 80% of the meat we eat. Now, we've all heard about the animal mistreatment, but an interesting topic has been corn. Our economy is really based on corn. It's 30% of the land in America is devoted solely to harvesting corn, processing it. And this corn, we're using technology to make corn into bed linens, batteries, baby powder, of course, anything with high fructose corn syrup.
Right.
But you may say, oh, this is great. We have all these uses for corn. But the problem is, because we have these huge companies controlling it, we're making corn into a monoculture.
Right.
Which it can be very detrimental because, say, if a virus came, it can wipe out all the corn easily because there's only one gene. And this could completely destroy our economy. Also, the problem with corn is we're making it so cheaply and so effectively that we're infiltrating other markets and driving especially the Mexican market into extinction, which is part of the reason why we have so many illegal immigrants. Furthermore, we're feeding it to a lot of our animals, which is a huge problem because animals aren't meant to eat corn. The cows, for example, are fed corn and can't process it effectively, which creates a very acidic acidic environment in their stomach. There have been many meat recalls because of the bacteria E. coli.
Right.
And this bacteria has actually killed many people because of the corn that we feed the cows. Now, these huge meat processing industries don't want to lose productivity by feeding their cows grass, which can be very expensive. So they keep on feeding the cows corn and instead are now processing our meat with ammonia, which is essentially poison. So although we're getting these, corn is being super productive, it's one of the basis of our economies. We're producing meat at an extremely high rate, but the problem is we're doing this at risk of the quality of our food.
It's interesting. It's really a sobering take on the future of food in America. Is this primarily a national problem, or is it also a worldwide problem?
Well, it's my research is solely devoted for the national base, but
right.
We see a lot of the markets changing to the counterculture, which is organic food, and we see the rise of that not only here but also in a bunch of other countries.
Interesting. All right, Kenan Walsh, thanks very much. Very well put, and thanks for coming on Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour.
Thanks.
Well done. All right, our next guest this afternoon on the radio show as we head towards the close of the program is Yong Ra. He's a second-year agricultural and environmental education major from San Jose, California. Welcome to the radio show, Yong.
Glad to be here.
Good to have you here. So we've been talking a lot about the Internet today. I understand that you've been thinking about the Internet as a sort of collective consciousness, and I'm wondering what that means and where you see all of us going with this concept in the future.
So the reason why I see the Internet as a collective consciousness of sorts is it's best described in one example. Just if anyone out there listening has ever had this time when your Internet's down, your cell phone just can't connect to anyone, and you just feel so disconnected, you feel so lost, there's all this gossip going on, there's all this friendship talking, there's tweets being had, status updates, all that, and you're not part of it just because you're not connected to the Internet.
Right.
And that disconnection, I think, it brings a lot of fear in us, just knowing that, you know, the whole world is out there connecting and communicating with one another, but I'm not part of it because, you know, this one device isn't letting me connect. So I think that's becoming a bigger problem nowadays, because we're losing some of that kind of face-to-face and people-to-people interaction that we get from actually going out, you know, outside, walking around the sidewalk and talking to people. Instead, now most of the communication is done online through instant messaging programs, Facebook messages, and even Twitter updates. Just, you know, short chunks of 140 characters, and that's all the interaction you get with the people there.
So you see that we all have a dependency upon these networks, and that when we can't tap into them, we quickly feel isolated, out of touch, maybe even kind of psychologically incomplete and, mm-hmm. and disconnected from who we love and who we are.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
So if you go out for a walk, say in the Arboretum, do you always bring your cell phone with you?
Well, I kind of have to.
Yeah.
We've become a society where you're pretty much, you kind of have to stay in touch. I mean, there might be some times during the weekends when you decide, hey, I'm not taking my cell phone on this walk with me, and you can stay disconnected, you know, reconnect with nature a bit. But, you know, most of the times during the weekday when everyone's, you know, working, there's projects to be done, homework to be had, you kind of have to stay connected in order to stay, you know, stay up with the times.
Otherwise, you really feel uncomfortable, which belies the reason for, say, going out for a nature walk in the first place.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
All right. That's really interesting. Thank you, Yong, for coming on the radio show and telling us about your research into the future of collective consciousness.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Well, folks, you're listening to KDBS 90.3 FM in Davis, and we have time for just one last student. Aaron Riggs is my final guest this afternoon. He's a first-year student, most likely to major in English and Technicultural Studies, two of the programs that I teach for here at UC Davis, where I also host Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. Aaron Riggs is a double major from Riverside County, California. Welcome to the program, Aaron.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So we were talking about this a little bit before with Kenan, but I'll ask you a similar question. What do you see as the advancements around the corner in agricultural practices in the next 10, 25, even 50 years?
Well, I'll talk a little bit more about monocultures.
Okay, thanks.
The idea is that over the next 25 or 50 years, we're going to see a dramatic shift in trend from farming with monocultural emphasis to a polycultural emphasis. And what that means is instead of farmers producing a single crop, and particularly one of the exact same genome, like Keenan was saying, that'll be something like the russet potato or the Cavendish banana, let's say, and you're going to try and ship that nation or worldwide. Instead, what's going to happen is you're going to see producers who are going to diversify their yields and localize shipments to cut costs. As nature constantly evolves, farmers are tending to a lot of current generation crops right now, like the russet and the Cavendish, and they're having to compensate for the lack of evolution within the plant itself by using pesticides, GMOs, other things like that. Eventually, though, natural evolution is going to win the fight, and it will become unsound for farmers to try and resist these diseases economically. For example, the Cavendish is actually going to go extinct within the next 10 to 15 years, scientists estimate. And once that sort of thing happens with all of the products that are currently in America's grocery stores, the genetic name brand crops, if you will, there will be an explosive amount of biodiversity happening in the tilling fields, and farmers are going to be trying to replace the old monocultures with new ones. Consequently, you'll see agricultural carbon footprints decrease as shipping becomes less of an issue and people localize their agriculture more. And you'll see an increase in market demand for agricultural genetic breeders, and it'll be their jobs to find the tastiest new strains to replace the Cavendish or the Russet or the Yukon, and to breed that with another offshoot strain in order to keep evolving produce and keep it one step ahead of nature.
So you see this focus on multicultural farming, if you will, as a kind of necessary defensive measure against the inevitable problems that will be associated with monocultural farming.
Exactly.
Interesting. All right. And as an English and technicultural studies major, what class that you've taken at UC Davis has helped you think about this the most, or is this mostly your own research?
This is more of a side project of mine. I'm going vegetarian right now, and it's kind of got me interested in just agriculture and the foods that I'm eating.
Excellent. Well, as someone who's been a vegetarian for 30 years, I'll welcome you to the club. And thanks very much, Aaron, for coming on Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour.
Thanks again for having me.
Absolutely. Well done. Well, those, ladies and gentlemen, are my students. Aren't they an impressive bunch? They've joined me this afternoon on this radio show, taking up a little bit of the next show's time. But if you're looking for time to get away with DJ Springy, then you've come to the right place. Let me tell you first, though, that tomorrow evening there will be an event celebrating the Undergraduate Journal of Creative Writing at UC Davis called Nameless Magazine at the John Itzulis Gallery, 1st and E Streets in downtown Davis. I, at 7 p.m. tomorrow, will also be hosting a fundraiser on the east side of town for Haiti disaster relief. If you'd like to learn more about that, then you can reach me any number of ways. One of the best ways is just to Google Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. You'll come across one of my many social networking profiles. Ask away. I'll be glad to provide you with the details. Well, stick around, ladies and gentlemen, because we've got some great music in store for you. You came to the right station, for you came to KDVS, 90.3 FM in Davis. I'd like to thank all of my guests, and I'll see you next week for another edition of Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour.